Hello, it is March 14th, 2016. This is Jennifer Voss, and I am with the October 2015 Life Coach Training Cohort Group C, or Classroom C, however they say it. This is Coach to Coach Practicum 3-2. Last week we talked about dream analysis, and this week we're diving into metaphor land. All the symbols in dreams are kind of metaphors for different things, but this is, we're going to be playing with metaphors in a little bit different way today. But before I start, somebody else just jumped on that I've not said hello to. Is that Ada?
Yes, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm okay.
Good, thank you. Anybody else I haven't said hello to? That's it? Okay. So I have that Lisa and Dee Dee both volunteered to coach or be coached out on the forum. And then at the top of the call, I asked Katrina if she would be willing. Anybody else out there want to be coach or client? Get that settled before we jump into Q&A. Anybody else out there want to be a client specifically? Oh, come on. Okay, well, I will call on people then when we. First of all, there was a question. Lisa had a question about dream analysis. Lisa, are you talking about the dream analysis that Martha wrote? Dream analysis that Martha wrote about Steering by Starlight.
Yes, I couldn't remember which book.
Yeah.
But I know that I've seen where the symbols are inserted.
Yes, and that's in Steering by Starlight, and it is also in your binder, I think.
Okay.
Where the symbols, that is one way to do the analysis, is to insert symbols. I'm looking. Yes. Yes, yes. Is you can rewrite the dream, and that excerpt from Steering by Starlight is in your binder. One of the things, and I might not have hit on it clearly enough last week or at all last week, our dream analysis class was the first when Martha first wrote Steering by Starlight. She wrote about it in this method of that we teach. There has been a tweak though in it when she wrote about it, there was a, the three column chart that we have, there was a fourth column. And the fourth column is what does this symbol represent in your waking life? And she would ask the question while the person was being the symbol, I am the ball, I am red, I am bouncy, I am vulnerable, whatever. And then the messages, and then she would ask the dreamer, red ball, what do you represent in the dreamer's waking life? What this did was took the dreamer out of their right brain into their left brain into analysis mode. Does that make sense? If you think about it, it's they're now the red ball analyzing, and it would start flipping people out of right brain into left brain. And so as the more we taught it and the more she played with it, she realized that's a great question to ask the symbol, red ball, what do you represent in the dreamer's waking life? But it's something you can talk about after the dreamer's been all the symbols and you've done the analysis part. So we drop that fourth column off, or drop that piece off of the dream analysis. And so now it is the symbol, give me three adjectives to describe yourself. What is your purpose? What is your helpful message? And those questions. Go through all the symbols, and then at the end, a lot of times the dreamer or your client will say, oh, wow, the red ball represents XYZ in my waking life, or the brown suit represents my dad, or they'll come and they'll offer these things up. Those are the things you can use to rewrite the dream. And in Steering by Starlight, that was the method of dream analysis she used. She would take those and rewrite the dream, inserting what the symbol represented in the waking life into the dream and rewrote it. That is one way to analyze a dream that is very helpful and beneficial. When we're on the phone with a client, and the way we've started teaching it now to your class is that we do two other things before we even get to that stage, if we ever get to that stage. First, you get through being all the symbols, and then you ask the client, what did you make of that? Did anything surprise you? What stood out for you? And let the client just go. Have a discussion. Find out what they're thinking first. What do they make it mean? Then second, if you have a hunch as a coach, then you can throw it out. You know, when you were talking about that red ball, I remember in a session a while ago, we talked about this, that, the other, and I made a connection. Would it be possible the red ball might represent this? Tell me where I'm wrong. You know, always wrap your hunches with a big tell me where I'm wrong. Then you can have a conversation around that. And most of the time, what the dreamer comes up with after they've been all the symbols, and then your discussion and your hunches as a coach, and after you've had discussions around that, usually provides a very in-depth analysis, and you don't ever have to get to the rewriting of the dream. The only times I actually rewrite dreams anymore, as Martha describes in Steering by Starlight, is if I'm doing my own. It's kind of fun. I think it's kind of like working a puzzle. And so I'll ask myself the question after I've been all the symbols. I'll say, what does this represent in my waking life? And I'll analyze it that way because I don't have anybody to talk to. So I'll go back through the symbols and go, what does the red ball represent in my waking life? Does this story, what does this represent in my waking life? And then I'll rewrite the dream, and it's fun. The other time that I've rewritten a dream like that is with a client is a puzzle cracker kind of client, and we've talked about it, and I've said, take this as a piece of homework. Ask yourself, go down the list of symbols. I'll send it to them, via email, the little chart. I'll say, go down the list of symbols and ask, just sit with it, kind of like meditate over it. What does this symbol represent in your waking life? And then rewrite it, a la Steering by Starlight, and see what comes up. That's a piece of homework that I sometimes assign to the client. But I don't generally rewrite the dreams like this anymore unless it's one of those two kind of scenarios. Does that help, Lisa?
Yes, I understand that clearly. Yes, thank you.
Good. You're welcome. So, and I'll just go ahead and give you this. When you run across the dream analysis part of your certification, if you're going to do the certification piece of all this, you will be asked to do a dream analysis. And what I look for when I'm one of the instructors, what I look for is that you've got the dream written out, you've got the three columns, the table with the three columns, you've led the client through the symbols, the adjectives, the messages, or purpose, answers to those questions. And then at the bottom, if you've chosen to rewrite the dream, great, include it. If not, give me a synopsis of the conversation or the conversation that you had with the client. And then most importantly is, what did the client take away, if anything, that they could use to help them in their daily waking life? That's what you're kind of after, is what limiting beliefs pop up, what wigs pop up, what puzzles did it help you crack to where you can take and now use that dream to help in your waking life somewhere. That's what we're after. And if it takes rewriting the dream to get there, great. If it doesn't, if it's just conversation between you and the client, great. So it's kind of both what you said. It's a new teaching method, and it's an interest of time thing. What will best serve your client? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Good. Good, good, good. And if it's a really hard step for you, I would suggest maybe taking a fun little dream that you have, a short one, and just trying it out on yourself.
That's how I know it's really hard.
Oh, you've done that.
Trying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And it may not be everybody has go-to tools, and go-to things that they like to put into their toolbox, and that just might not be one that comes easily for you. And it may be that you just like having conversations around it all and, puzzle crack out loud. That's perfectly okay.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Any other questions about dream analysis or anything else you've been practicing?
I had a quick question about just sort of a little minutia about when you reread the list of things to your client
mm-hmm.
that they talked about,
mm-hmm.
do you use first person or third person?
Oh, whatever feels most natural to you.
Okay.
I remember having this discussion, and we actually got into a debate. It was another master coach, and I got into a debate about it. And then we just stopped and laughed and go, oh, my gosh, we're instituting rules that are not even there.
Okay.
How,
but somehow it's sometimes it's like you are dark, you are, you know, or whatever. Seems a little funny.
It seems a little funny. Yeah, it's whatever your conversation style is and whatever works for you and the dreamer in the moment. So if
okay.
it's something that is dark, and that actually brings up a point that I'm not sure I mentioned in the last class. One of the easy ways to tell if the dreamer is actually in the symbol, you know, being the symbol or just looking at the symbol, is the adjectives that they'll use. So like, and this is a good, when you said dark, it reminded me of one, is sometimes there will be scary symbols that you look at them in the dream and it scares you. They appear to be scary. And if you say, or if the client says, I am the, oh, give me something scary, the boogeyman. I am the boogeyman and I am scary. That is the client looking at the symbol. Because most of the time, the symbol is not going to describe themselves as scary, because all symbols are benevolent. All symbols are a piece of your subconscious there to give you a message. Most of the time, I have not ever had one actually, they showed up to be scary, unless it was the only way that the client could get the message. But usually, scared people become scary. Usually the adjective, if the client is actually the symbol, is I am scared, I am angry, I am acting out, or I am trying to get your attention, or I am something along that lines, rather than I am scary. So it's one of those fun things to kind of listen for, the adjectives that the clients use. Are they actually the symbol, or are they looking at the symbol as the dreamer? I know that's a total sidebar, but does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's fun to play. And sometimes a client can't quite get into the symbol, and if they say, I am scary, I am red, I am whatever, I might let it go. Just knowing that the other symbols and the other things will give us what we need. So it's just a little tip. Okay, any other questions?
I have a question. This is Sarah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Sarah.
I've been meaning to ask this question. I and this is for myself and if I have any clients that also have the same situation as myself. So I take a medication that if taken at the later part of the day, I'm supposed to take it in the morning, causes really intense nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
And which I don't have if I'm not, without this medication, I never had. So I'm curious about doing the dream analysis when my dreams are affected by the medication.
Mm-hmm. You know what I would suggest is playing with it. Because
okay.
nightmares, people, a lot of times coaches, new coaches and clients are scared to go into nightmares because all the symbols do seem dark, scary, or not all of them, but a lot of them seem dark and scary and, oh my gosh, I don't want to relive that.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that all the chemicals in the medication have affected the brain in some way, and it could be that the brain is under chemical inducement making up a story. That story is coming from some place in your subconscious.
Right.
So my guess is there's still going to be very valid messages, and the symbols really and truly are benevolent. They're just being tapped into by the release of something that the medication is causing you to tap into.
Okay.
So I would play with it and see, because the messages are I've led some people through some dreams that I was a little bit afraid to lead them through because they were very graphic and gory, and
mm-hmm.
it never fails that the messages are benevolent. and they are a way out of whatever it is in the subconscious. It's a way out of having those anymore, really. I mean, the medication might still affect you. You might still have, they'll have night terrors or whatever, but it won't be that specific message anymore. It'll be something different. And it's a different way of working through.
Okay,
Yeah, does that make sense?
It does. Sometimes, to be clear, they're not always like nightmares, but very specifically different than my regular dreaming. So that's why I was asking. But I will start doing it on both and see what I
and just see tonight. See what because you everybody's different and you'll have your preferences and you know, and sometimes I have dreams and I'm like, oh, that was weird, and I'll sit down to analyze it. I'm like, no, I'm not feeling the pull to analyze it. It's not that interesting, you know. So just use your intuition. I mean this is not the same, but I can't take NyQuil or any of those kind of cold medications because it does the same thing. And I'll wake up in, you know, cold sweat and all of that. And it was interesting to look at. It was not the normal messages, but they were interesting nonetheless.
Okay. Thank you for answering that.
You're welcome. And piggybacking off that, people have also asked, what about recurring dreams? Recurring dreams are fun to analyze because they will either show up again and give you an entire, you know, like go on to the next scene, like, you know, leave the recurring part and carry on, or they'll resolve themselves, or you just simply won't have them anymore because you will have gotten the message that it was trying to give you. So those are fun too.
Can I ask a follow-up question? This is Aida.
Sure.
So if you have a client and they're working through a scary dream, a nightmare, or even a night terror, and you find that they are, as they're going through the dream analysis, they're just, you can tell that they're visibly uncomfortable or scared of even going there, do you abandon that and do other dreams or ask for different things, or how would you?
If I've got a client and a dream triggers something that a therapist is needed, I mean, and that's what I would, you know, that wow, going into that has left them in a place that really has taken them back into, you know, old childhood wound that's not been processed or something, I will immediately stop. And generally what I will do is pull them back into the present using their senses. And it's an old AA trick where when people are tempted to drink in a situation and they're triggered, is you come back and, you know, what do you taste? What do you see? What do you smell? What do you hear? What do you feel on your fingers? And bring them back into their body, bring them back in their senses, and ask them between each one, are you safe in this moment? Are you safe in this moment? Look around. Give me some examples and some evidence of how you're safe in this moment. That's on the far end of the spectrum if somebody really gets triggered. And then I will say, you know what, this triggered something that, you know, do you have a therapist? Do you have somebody you can talk to? Because this is over my pay grade. As far as, you know, it probably would be really good for you to go talk to a therapist about this, such, you know, in short. If it is just something that it brings up fear, and I've had this before, and it leads to a strong emotion of anger or sadness or fear, and I can hold the space for the client, you'll be able to tell in your body whether it's getting outside your ability to or not, and just let them sit in it for a minute, they will pass right through it. And they will be able to see that, and whatever the message is that the symbol is trying to tell them, it usually is that it's safe to feel that emotion. It can be quite simple and quite profound. Somebody that is very afraid of processing or feeling anger, if they can just sit and feel it and realize that 90 seconds through that, oh, my God, I didn't explode and this thing didn't overtake me and I can actually sit with it, now what is the message it's trying to give me? Set clear, you know, such as set clearer boundaries, or somebody has, you know, violated a value or something. you'll get to a really, really powerful message. So that is your ability as a coach to sit in the uncomfortable, for not sit in the uncomfortable where it takes somebody to where they need the therapist part, but to sit within the uncomfortable and allow somebody to really experience a feeling. Because a lot of clients I've had have not allowed themselves to experience anger or have not really allowed themselves to grieve. Grief is another one. And to just give them the space to experience viscerally feeling the emotion that is trying to come up. That is one of the most powerful things you can do as a coach.
Okay.
And it took me a while to be courageous enough to do that, because I was feeling what they were feeling, and, you know, it was like, oh, my God, you know, I'm supposed to be providing relief, and this is not relief. and then trusting that, oh, yes, which took me doing my own work around feeling all those strong emotions. So.
Okay.
Right, does that make
you.
Sense?
Yes. No, that was really helpful. Thank you.
Good. Any other questions? By the way, that goes for not just dream analysis, sitting and allowing clients to feel their emotions. It goes in just any coaching session, any coaching tool, anything. When you're doing the work, it can bring up powerful emotions with people. So that's just a practice of sitting with your client to allow them to feel. And actually, that's a great segue. Because sometimes things get so emotionally charged with a client that they cannot puzzle crack around it. This is exactly why we use metaphor. When something is so emotionally charged, they felt the emotion, they're in it, but they can't, you know, it's like they hit a wall and they can't quite puzzle crack how to do something or how to break an old pattern, or that is where metaphor comes into play, because you're allowing them to look outside of themselves, outside of the emotional charge, seeing something metaphorically, telling a story about it, and then going, oh, that story, hold on, how can I apply that story back to this puzzle that's so emotionally charged without getting into the emotion? You always want to feel the emotion because you want to know which way to crack the puzzle. What is the message the emotion is telling me? But then now, in order to crack the puzzle, can we get out of that scary place in our brain, into our right brain for a few minutes, tell ourselves a different story, one that has a solution in it, then come back and apply it to the situation? So, I mean, it's a great segue, actually, into why we even use metaphors. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, and why dream analysis is so powerful. It just gives you a different way to look at things. Any other questions before we dive in? No? Okay. So playing with metaphors, this is truly, I mean, you can use metaphors in anywhere, in any square, but we normally flop it into the middle of square two because this is truly a there are no rules tool. Square two, there are no rules, and that's okay. Metaphors, playing with metaphors, proverbially, metaphorically speaking, it's like taking your coaching practice and plopping yourself down in a sandbox with your client. And you're sitting in the middle of the sandbox playing, and you don't know what you're going to create yet the client has some image of the puzzle they want to crack or whatever. They bring that into the sandbox, put it kind of over to the side, and say, okay, now let's build something out of sand. You've got all these materials. You've got, you know, these buckets and the pails and the water if you want to make it harder and, you know, all pat together. You can bring, you know, crayons or whatever else you want into the sandbox too. And you bring all that into your coaching practice and you play with your client with it, like a child playing. That was metaphor, huh? Who said they were going to coach first? Dee Dee and Lisa. So Lisa, would you be willing to coach? I know you were the client last week. You put up there that you would be willing to coach. Lisa, you were just here.
Oops, sorry. Yes, I would love to.
Oh, there you go. Okay. and then, actually, I want Dee Dee to coach. So, Katrina, you said you were willing to be the client. Are you willing to be a client?
I can be a client.
Excellent. Okay, Lisa, any questions before you jump in?
Am I just jumping in?
Yeah. Well, that's what I said. Any questions? Any questions before you jump in? And so here's what I always tell people. Here's what I always tell people. You're going to meet the client where they are. If she comes in and there's a big whopping limiting belief, you're not going to ignore the fact there's a limiting belief there. You're going to coach as you know how to coach. And if there's any way to try to play with metaphor, let's do that. But sometimes, you know, people barge through and, you know, it's like the tool or all else. And no, it's the client first. Then let's try to play with the tool. And if you have any questions, like would this be a good place or would that be a good place, just stop and ask me.
Okay.
Okay?
Sure. Edie, are you out there?
I'm Katrina.
Oh, no, this is
I'm here.
Katrina.
Oh, sorry. Katrina.
That's okay. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm pretty darn good. I'm pretty good.
Ah, tell me what's going on in your life. Tell me something that's causing you some stress.
Well, okay, so let me just see if I can decide which one, what direction to go.
I'm with you.
Well, okay, I'll pick this one. So I have been given the opportunity to lead a retreat in July. And I've not ever led my own before. I've been part of them. I've contributed to retreats, but I've not led my own. And I was given this opportunity by another yoga teacher friend of mine who has led a few on her own. And she has kind of a deal going with this place, this beautiful location in Arizona, in Sedona. And she asked me if I would like to basically use that place. I offered to take care of all of the cooking, all of the food, and I would be responsible for content and leading the retreat. And it just sounded really amazing, and I said yes, basically. So I put the deposit down. But now I'm terrified because now I have to with everything, with all of the and she'll help me. She'll help me with and she's like, you know, she's a friend of mine. She'll help me with the marketing but since she also uses this same retreat center for her retreats, and she has already been charging a certain amount of money. And it's a higher amount than honestly I would have charged. And my inclination is to say, well, is to lower the price, but it's been working for her. I just don't know, is this something, I'm feeling a little, I don't know if weird or, I don't know if stuck is the right word. I want to just go with the price that she's been working with because it's worked for her, even though it seems like a high number from my opinion. But for the location, everything, it works. So the whole thing scares me, even though I've already said yes, and I'm excited about saying yes. And I'm already feeling like that sluggishness that hits right after you say yes. I do. I'm so excited. This was just like 3 days ago. I put down a deposit, and so now I'm like, okay, now it's time to act. It's time to like form my content and do come up. I already have a person who can do flyers, but now I'm just feeling sort of lethargic. Like it's like I want to hide. Like I go back in bed, put the covers on my head, and just stay there. Like I don't even want to face it now that I have already said yes to it. Of course, that's ridiculous, and I've, you know, but so that's kind of where I am with this, and there it is looming in front of me, both exciting and terrifying at the same time. How's that?
Oh my gosh! Yes, I can feel it. I can.
feel it. I feel like I am not able to breathe fully.
I'm sorry.
I feel your excitement, and I am so excited for you, and I also feel this terrified, oh, my gosh, how do I even start? I don't know what to do, and is this price going to work out for me or change it?
Yeah.
So let's just take a couple of breaths for a moment. Big breaths. Ah, yes. And I am wondering if you could break it down a little bit more for me, the parts that feel exciting and challenging in a good way and the parts that feel challenging, like, oh, I want to go hide.
Okay. The exciting, challenging parts would be kind of designing what I want to present. And just the thought of being there with a group of people feels very exciting. Just that, like, the actual weekend itself to me feels exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to involve yoga and meditation and, you know, cool stuff like that, and some coaching. It's putting myself out there, like the advertising, the it's the drawing the participant part.
Mm-hmm.
And then that little hang up about the price, which is probably just a perfectly fine price that my own mind has decided is too high. Yeah. So it's kind of the behind the scenes stuff that gives me more terror than the actual upfront.
It's the pricing and the selling yourself and putting yourself out there.
Yeah. For sure.
What's so bad about putting yourself out there?
Nothing, I guess, because I'm already out there. I mean, you know, it's like, the opportunity for people to just question. I guess I'm already there, so whatever it is that's out there, I'm already doing, because it's just putting myself out there in a different way, like instead of, you know, because I teach yoga, so it's like I'm already, like, inviting people, that, you know, telling people why I teach here and I teach there, so it's not that different. It's just saying, oh, now it's a whole weekend of just me. for a lot of money.
Okay, this money piece keeps coming up, so let's talk about that.
Okay.
When you point your body compass towards the money issue in this retreat,
mm-hmm.
are you getting a sense from your body? Are you quiet enough to have your body lead and give you a sense of what's going on?
Hmm.
Have you sat with it?
Yeah. I think I can do that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, and that's why I said yes, because I know that to say no would have made me feel very sad. Like, to say no would have been, it would have felt yucky.
Uh-huh.
You know, the money thing, it's like, you know, when I'm teaching, like, I specifically created a class that was donation-based. Like, one of the classes I teach during the week is donation-based, just because I wanted everyone, like anyone who wouldn't necessarily be able to afford, you know, what I offer, to show up and just enjoy a class. And I do have friends who have been unemployed, and I've told them, just show up, you know. It's like, you know, don't worry about it. Just come and enjoy a class. When I know that they're struggling. And so to ask such a high amount, what I consider to be a high amount, to me it feels like it would exclude a lot of people. But that may not be true. Like, I could be making that up. That in my mind, it would, like, some people would look at it and say, no, I just won't do it because of the price. And maybe that's okay.
So to you, the money issue is about possibly excluding people, and that's not part of your values. When you think about what to charge, do you get a visual? Is there a visual regarding money that we could talk about?
Interesting. Let me think about that for a second or feel it. I don't know. All that came up is like a murky pond when I think about the money part of it. Like a rather smallish pond that isn't clear. Like I can't see the bottom. It just seems a little bit muddy. Like it's not a pond I would want to like jump into or like, you know.
No wonder you're avoiding it, right? It doesn't.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't sound fun. So it's a small murky pond. It's
yeah.
Not clear. Does it have a smell?
Not particularly. Not surprisingly.
Where are you in relation to the pond?
I'm standing outside looking into it. And it's actually, it's not a naturally occurring pond. It's like a man-made. Like it actually has like a brick boundary around it, you know, like it was created to be something that has been neglected. And like, so I could come and sit on the edge of that kind of brick enclosure of the muddy, murky pond.
Right. Do you want to sit by it?
Kinda.
Why don't you go sit?
All right, I'll go sit. All right. So I'm sitting.
Does it feel comfortable to be that close?
You know, I'd rather turn away from it, but looking at it, it's not that bad.
What else is around you? Do you see any wildlife or natural objects?
Yeah, I'm surrounded by pretty trees and things and blue sky up above. And everything around the murky pond is beautiful.
Oh, yay.
Murky pond that I don't like.
Right. And can you give it another look and see, can you see through the top layer? Is it just the bottom that's murky or is it all the way through?
The top layer is, so the top layer isn't as murky as the bottom. The top has a little bit of shimmer to it.
And the bottom looks pretty impenetrable.
It's just cloudy.
Okay.
I mean, it's not really that scary now that I'm staring at it. It's just a little bit neglected.
I wonder if the pond has any messages for you. You want to become the pond for a second and see what happens?
I'm already in the pond, it turns out. I mean, it's like it's all around me.
Oh.
And it doesn't really... It's mostly just... It really isn't that scary. Like, it's not that bad.
Not that bad.
And, like, it's not really trying to, like,
in it.
Hurt me. It's actually benevolent. Whatever I said earlier. Yeah, it's... Yeah, it's really not that bad. And it's almost, there's almost a buoyancy in the water, now that I'm in the water instead of sitting on the end.
Mm-hmm. So you're feeling a little buoyant, a little held up by the water.
Yeah.
And now that you're in it, can you see your toes down at the bottom?
No, but if I, like, stick my toes up at the top, then that's not so bad because it's buoyant, remember, so I can stick my toes out and look at them. But if I put my feet in the bottom, I still can't see my feet.
That's a great solution.
Yeah, I guess so.
Whatever's at the bottom, you can bring it up to the top. Interesting.
I don't, it's, so now that I'm feeling buoyant, I don't feel like a need to immediately clean it. You know, it's like I'm okay almost just sort of being held by it. Like the fact that it's still brown, but like it's not that bad. Like I don't mind it. Like it's not a horrible thing.
What strikes you when we think about the pond being a metaphor for money in this particular retreat?
Mm-hmm.
What lessons can be learned from the pond?
Well, I think I'm just supposed to trust, you know, what my friend has already started. Because, like, the pond is holding me. Like, it's not... like nothing in it is hurting me. I'm not feeling harmed in any way. And it's not even, I'm not even stressed as I'm sitting here. Like if I were to sort of trust what my friend has already set up, and give it a try.
How does that feel when you check in with your body? Where, what kind of sensations are you having and where?
It feels okay. Like, it doesn't feel wonderful, but it feels like, yeah, it's all right. Like, nothing, like, my chest feels kind of open. Whereas before when I thought about it, it felt a little more gripped, but now it feels a little more open. Like, really, there's nothing to be afraid of. That's really what I'm getting from this murky pond, that it might look kind of muddy, but it's really okay, and there's support in it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
You mentioned support of your friend who asked you if you wanted to do this.
Yeah.
And did you say you already had someone that could do the flyers?
Yeah.
The brochures?
Mm-hmm.
And the message you're getting is there's nothing to be afraid of?
Yeah.
To trust that your friend started?
Yeah.
And your chest is open?
Yeah.
Sounds like that's a thumbs up.
Yeah, it still does. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it sounds like a thumbs up.
How does that change today?
It feels a lot better.
Yay.
Yeah, it feels like I don't necessarily want to hide under the covers all day long.
Excellent. Excellent.
Excellent.
Yeah. Was there somewhere else you wanted to go with this, Lisa?
No, I'm just enjoying the process.
Okay. Nice playing. I just want to reach out to the rest of the class. Does anybody listening, because I don't want to leave it here. I want to keep playing a little bit. Since we found a good metaphor and you started playing with it, does anybody else have any questions or things that your kind of marmoset has picked up about based on the metaphor that came up?
Hello?
Yes?
Hello, can you hear? Yeah, it's Dee Dee.
Yes. Hey, Dee Dee.
Hi. I kind of picked up that... that money is not her thing, not maybe that she doesn't really care about it. Like she cares, she's, and I'm thinking, and I don't know, But I'm thinking maybe that's why this person who has set the rate and has a lot of the marketing and advertising already in place has picked her, has picked Katrina, because she is good at what she does. And that it's, you know, that maybe, I don't know, maybe you're supposed to feel like you're, that you should charge money, but I wonder if it's okay to not make that important. Anyway, that's what came up for me.
So Katrina, does that bring up anything for you? Does that resonate?
That's kind of interesting, Dee, because really this sounds like such a fun project that I would do it for free. So, So now I have to like convince people to pay for something that I really, because I would do this for nothing. This sounds like so much fun. So how do I bring myself, how am I going to earn a living at this if I'm so willing to do things for free?
Breathe.
Take a deep breath.
Another deep breath.
I mean, I don't know how to coach her around that, but I would, I would invite her to say to that person, that's not the part I do. The part I do is the designing, the content, the being with the people. That's what I do. I don't do advertising, marketing, and money.
That could be a very good way to fix it, and that goes to the square three fix it part of the thing. What I'm most interested in is when Katrina starts talking about money, she stops breathing and gets really, I mean, there's some anxiety underneath it, right? And the solution might be to tell this person, hey, I would love to show up. That might be a great solution that you just threw out. And I'm really interested in the energy that comes up when Katrina talks about money and the metaphor that Lisa walked her through. Did you notice, and this is the value of metaphor that I was talking about, how she was talking about being in the full situation that included charging, included the money, because the metaphor was about money, and she got in the middle of it and she was still relaxed and it wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
Did you feel the difference in the energy while she was in the metaphor versus while she was actually talking about it specifically?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the power of metaphor. And we don't necessarily solve it right now, but we're able to get, and Katrina, you can tell me where any of this is wrong, able to get Katrina to kind of sit it and go, oh, this is not so bad. It's still murky. It's still not. And she used the word neglected twice. When clients start repeating words like that, I start paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
So in there, it's like, okay, so things that get neglected, sometimes there's a reason, sometimes not, just interesting, and it's still not so bad. So it brings her to out of under the covers, which that's the whole point, is like to bring the client out from under the covers and to be able to look at it, go, oh, okay, hold on. Maybe this is not so bad. Maybe this is not so scary. So just now, out of just curiosity, because now my interest is piqued because I heard her energy escalate again when she was out of the metaphor. If you got back into that pond or sitting next to the pond again, Katrina, can you go there?
Mm-hmm.
So are you in it or next to it? Where are you?
I'm in it.
You're in it? Okay. What is the temperature? What is the temperature like?
It's just about, it's not as hot as bath water. It's kind of just like a nice, it's cool and temperate.
Cool and temperate. Okay. All right. So you're in it. And you see some things around that are natural and nice. You can float in it. You can... What is allowing you to float? What is the property of the water that is allowing you to be buoyant?
Kind of like the murky stuff, it itself is almost holding me. Like it's like the water has a thickness to it.
Okay. Okay. Would it be possible, so if money is murky,
mm-hmm.
and it's also supportive,
mm-hmm.
would it be possible to remind yourself through this, because this is a brand new experience for you, so it's going to bring up fears, and money is a very typical one for something new to, you know, the money fear is a typical one to come up for something new, especially when you're charging more than you're used to charging, and when you have an altruistic personality, you want to help people. Right? So
yeah.
This is a very normal thing. Sometimes it might take experiencing the charging of money, receiving of money, going through the workshop, and realizing, oh wow, wait, it's still murky,
mm-hmm.
and yet it's supporting me.
Yeah.
Is it possible to see that?
Yeah, mm-hmm. totally. I can come back.
So there may not be a fix-it here in this
yeah.
specific session. It may be just allowing yourself to feel that and feel that money can make my heart race and catch my
mm-hmm.
breath and all that. But when
yeah.
I find myself in that energy state, maybe I can think about allowing, flipping to the metaphor. And it's still murky. I don't have to solve it. And it can become a support rather than a hindrance.
Yeah.
Is that possible?
It is. And something else that came to me was that in trusting my friend to just go ahead and have the experience of charging what I think is too much, receiving it,
uh-huh.
and then at the
uh-huh.
and at the end decide how I liked it because I haven't had the experience yet. So
this, my friend, is square three. This is square three. You test and you try and you figure out what you like, you figure out what you don't like, you figure out what works, you figure out what doesn't work. This is the pure definition right here of square three.
Yeah.
If it weren't money that were scaring you, it might be content for somebody else, or it might be the marketing for somebody else, or it might be the, oh, my God, I've got to show up and face these people. They're going to, you know, what it's something, and if it's something worth doing, your lizard is going to pull on something to try
yeah.
to stop you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah? And there could be, and I've heard some real thoughts in here that could be worked. I'm not saying there's no thoughts in here to work. There are.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, this is one way to use the metaphor, and if it is supporting you, I almost feel like it's, and you've got your feet up, it's behind you. It's not
mm-hmm.
blocking you anymore. It's behind you. It's supporting you, which
yeah.
allows you to move forward. Tell me where I'm wrong.
I like that. Yeah, no, I think that's it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Power metaphor. You've moved the thing from a block to be behind you, something that has your back.
Yeah.
And you still don't have to believe it. It still can be murky.
Yeah.
Yet it's got a very different energetic feel to it in me if I sit in it, in that buoyant, murky kind of water that's supporting me.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Lisa,
no, I want to
love. Yeah, okay. So what yeah. all in square three, every turtle step is about take the turtle step, which you sign the you send in the deposit, you know, take the turtle
mm-hmm.
step. Ooh, what comes up? Okay, clear what comes up just enough to take the next turtle step. I want to move forward. What's the next turtle step?
Yeah.
Ooh, money fear again, or whatever fear comes up. Ooh, clear that out so you can take
yeah.
the next turtle step. That's what squares out.
Okay.
So nice work, Lisa, getting just being there and allowing her to visualize and allowing. And I even loved your idea of becoming the pond, but then allowing her to go, well, no, I'm in it. yeah, and that's mixing the dream analysis and the metaphor together, which is perfectly fine. It's just knowing the difference. One is looking at and being with something. One is becoming something. It's a very different
mm-hmm.
kind of tool. And allowing her to just know to be with it, which was very fruitful.
Yes.
So very, very, very nice. Now, did just for kicks and giggles because we're in this, real quick, and we won't do it, but did anybody hear the limiting beliefs pop up? Did anybody hear any and catch any of the limiting beliefs? know? And when you're working metaphor, it's a great time to kind of listen for limiting beliefs. I don't usually stop in the middle of a metaphor and go to the limiting belief and work it, because then we don't get to the solution for this, we don't get to the place of relief where she can come out from under the sheets and take another turtle step forward. Mm-hmm. But I log to the side. The one that I wrote is, I have to convince people to pay for me. I have to convince people to pay for my workshop, to pay for me. I was like, oh, that's now, an interesting, probably one that's going to come back up. So as a coach, I would log it.
Hmm.
And there's
the
whole theme over.
What about the excluding people one?
That's another one. Oh, that's, yes, there were several. So I was just asking people what they noticed. And Katrina, you can block your ears or go la, 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 la or something. Because this is not to pile
it's okay.
on. This is just for coaching practice. Yes, the excluding people. I will be excluding people if I charge money. That's a great one to work. It is too much. That's charging too much. That may be another great one to work. Another tool you could use as a coach when that comes up is to go strictly into the body compass. Take away the story of money and go to do body pricing. Go to your body compass and tell what feels right. And it could be that you choose to. You're not... You choose to charge lower, and yet the metaphor and the things that's supporting you and everything kind of feels like it's stretching your edge. It's pushing your edge to charge as much as this other woman charges, and yet, Katrina, what is your body telling you when you just really sit into it and kind of set the lizard aside? What is the sensation in your body?
It's nothing stressful. Like, the sensation mm-hmm. in my body is similar to what I was feeling when I was sitting in the pond. It's a similar.
When you were what? Uh-huh. That was my guess, is that mm-hmm. metaphor played out the way it did because it was money. I mean, it was specifically, it was the money that you were charging, and it was supporting you, which yeah. didn't even as much feel like it was murky, but it didn't even feel like it was pushing the envelope too far.
Yeah.
Like too high. It didn't even feel like it was maybe even be high enough to get you to the oh my God stage.
Yeah. Yeah, good point.
So you can go to your body and go, okay. And that is the playing with that metaphor the way you did is going to the body in just a whole different way.
Yeah.
So it's a great example. Anybody else have any questions or hunches or things that you wrote down? So Lisa, how was that coaching?
I loved it. I was able to just be with her and really I felt her stress and
mm-hmm.
felt like I was asking questions kind of from all different angles of our training so far, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Usually we have one focus when we coach people, and this time there was a little body in there. There was a little, beliefs came up, and I didn't see a way to get into metaphors for a while. It was really fun.
I loved how you did get there and the questions you asked. And, yes, this is where we start blending the tools together. And you as the coach using your intuition of which way to go with what. And so very, very nice job. Katrina, how are you feeling?
I feel good. I feel good. Lisa, you did great. Your questions were good. Like you would ask a question, and I'm like, they made me pause, which was what they're supposed to do. So you did. And I felt safe the whole time. You did a really good job. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I think a lot of us are having issues around money and
mm-hmm.
the excitement of, oh, my gosh, I'm pushing myself, and, oh, my gosh, I
mm-hmm.
just want to be in bed, and I wish I hadn't said yes.
Yeah. Yep, and just all that square three lizard right there, that's what it is. You do something, it feels like a risk, and, oh, my God, what did I just do? So very nice. And I'll often tell people that, yes, you can write down the limiting beliefs, but really your lizard wants you to go grab a limiting belief and go sit in square one for a while. So one of the most beneficial things you can do is not go to the limiting belief right off. See if you can use that can clear the way to take the next turtle step. Knowing that the limiting beliefs are there and you can go there if needed. But that's why we have all these other tools for the other squares. So, and I must say, at the very beginning when you said, Lisa, that you could feel her energy of the different things that were happening in her body as she talked about it, the fact, take a breath. Whatever you feel as a coach is probably in your body, doesn't matter. Take care of yourself first. So if you were feeling that, I love that you stopped and take three breaths if needed. Getting the client back into her body was a very nice move. So I just wanted to say that too.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So Dee Dee, you there?
Yes. Yeah, I'm here.
You willing to coach?
Sure.
Okay. Excellent. So we need a client. Who would like to be a client? Hello. Oh, come on. Somebody out there's got something. Or I can call on somebody. Oh, I'm sitting here looking. Adrian's muted. How about Sarah? You willing to be a client? She may be muted too. Okay, next. Who has not been a client for a while? Ada?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Are you willing to be the client today?
Sure.
All right, Dee Dee, take it away. Okay. Hey, Ada, how are you?
Hi, Dee Dee, how are you? I'm well. It's been a while. We haven't talked.
Yeah.
What's going on?
What's up?
I think I'm sort of stuck in this place where as we get closer to actually a coaching practice, I think some other people already have coaching practice, but for me, I don't. And I think as we get closer to, you know, finding our niche and finding our practice area and, you know, even getting clients to practice with, I feel a lot of resistance and anxiety in my body. And I think it makes me feel very uncomfortable because I sort of like being anonymous and not, I think from what I see, it seems like to have a successful coaching practice, you kind of have to put yourself out there and, you know, your face is on your website and that kind of thing. And all of that, just everything about that just makes me really anxious inside. So that's, I think, one of the big things that I feel like I'm really sensing and aware of at the moment.
Okay, so anxiety around marketing yourself, around finding who you are as a coach, sounds like you're kind of stuck there and it's stressful.
I don't know if it's the marketing piece. I think I feel like it has more to do with, you know, I think my own sense of it is like I have, it stems from being sexually abused as a child. And the thing that I feel like I always longed for is to just be anonymous where nobody could see me. And this is really touching on all these areas inside of me where it's like, oh, I'm going to be seen. And so that feels, I feel like the anxiety might be from that, but I'm not totally sure.
Okay, so fear of coming out, of exposing yourself, being out there. Okay. Okay, so that sounds like something we could work with. That anxiety when it comes up about putting yourself out there, can you visualize something like an animal, a place, a thing? Like, what would it be for you if you were to create something, a visual? What does it look like?
I think it feels like I'm maybe in a cove and there's like really harsh waves or something crashing against the rocks, and I feel very safe in this cave. And I feel like there's certain people who know how to get there, and I like that, that I still have contact with the outside world, but I don't really need to, you know, be out there.
So the cave is the cozy place, but the harsh waves, those are...
Yeah, kind of like if you could, I guess if, yeah, it feels like a cove, like, you know, along a coast or something. And, you know, outside there's sort of like these harsher elements of nature maybe. And, you know, I feel very safe in my little cave, cove or whatever.
So who comes in, like who's really good at coming through, who can swim through those waves, and what gets past all that harsh nature to get into the cave?
I think maybe in my mind I picture like a trail or some, like, you know, maybe a pathway down the rocks or something that, you know, a few friends, like, over the years, like, you know, like, maybe one or two, like, really, really good friends have been able to find path and have come.
So but getting back to the anxious feeling, what is the anxious feeling? Is that the wave? Is that the harsh sea around the cave, the little cove? What does the anxiousness look like? Like if you were to visualize it.
Maybe it would be the waves. Maybe it could be being out in the sun, being on the slippery rocks. I don't know.
And is it, how does it feel to be there? Like when you go back there now, how is it in your body to be on the slippery rock?
I mean, I think it feels very vulnerable. It feels very exposing. And yet, you know, I mean, I think the whole coaching experience is so... life-giving,
mm-hmm.
that it makes me, I think, want to do that. You want to go outside of, you know, the safe place. But, you know, there's still, like, this sort of, it's kind of like, you know, there's, like, signs everywhere. It's like, danger, danger, like, you know, whatever.
So, I'm kind of stuck. I don't know. So, Dee Dee, what are you hearing?
I'm hearing that she's created this safe space for herself, and now she's she wants to get out there. She's ready to leave the cave, but it's scary.
Yeah.
It's scary. It's like, you know, where do I go? It's scary.
So this is she's on the precipice most likely. Ada, you can tell me where I'm wrong with any of this. If she's dreamed and schemed within the cave, she's been able to dream and scheme about this. Building practice and all of that. And she's ready to kind of stick her foot at just using the metaphor. Sometimes all we need is a metaphor, and then you can just start playing with it. You don't really have to kind of be in the cave and have her stay in the metaphor forever. You can just use it as a way to communicate and start telling the story. So it sounds like Ada's ready to stick her toe out, maybe go stand on one of those rocks to start attracting clients, yet the story she believes is that you have to have a website with a picture up and you have to fully expose yourself in order to market and be seen and attract clients.
Right.
Ada, tell me where I'm wrong.
Yes.
Yeah. So here's where the limiting belief comes in. I heard two things then is that could help with this. One, the limiting belief is I have to be a flip marketer to be a coach. You could go and do the work on that. Or you word it in Ada's words, but basically that's what I heard is I have to go outside of being me in order to market myself and be a coach. I have to go outside of what I feel is safe for me right now in order to market myself and be a coach. I basically have to throw myself into the turbulent waves and drown myself in order to be a coach.
I heard that she needs a niche. She said she didn't have a niche or.
And that is going to the place. Now we do want to spend some time in the square one because we're getting this is lizard fear, but it's hitting into some foundational, especially because of the story she shared about her childhood, foundational beliefs about what is safe and what isn't. And this is square one work. This is where you've done your square two work, and this is how it's so not the square. Going to the square is just so not linear. You even think about going to three, and boom, you're back to one because you've hit a foundational belief system that this is fundamentally not safe. And I have to be who I am not, which all of our coaching tools are training us to be exactly who we are. All of a sudden, now I'm believing I have to be who I'm not in order to do this. Bam.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a biggie. Ada, tell me where I'm wrong. You there, Ada?
Yes, I'm here. I wonder if it doesn't feel like I'm questioning or finding a different identity in being like a coach as far as like being out there. But
right.
there is a struggle of I think the whole sense of safety, like, can I be out there?
And be safe.
I don't know, and be safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe that's not what you're hearing. I don't know.
Oh, no, that's, I think, exactly what I'm hearing, and thank you for putting it into yours. And then to market, you said something about, from what I've seen, you have to, you know, have your picture on your website and things like that. So to market in that way would feel unsafe.
Yeah, I think maybe the foundational stuff where being invisible feels safer than having somebody's attention on me, and I think that feels very
So we're very much now back into square one waters, if we want to, and we continue to use the metaphor of the cave. Another thing that I heard, which is another direction that this could go, and then, Dee Dee, I'll let you choose.
Okay.
I mean, you and Ada can choose, is the way Ada described the cave and how comfortable it was and how there was actually a path to get there that allowed Ada to feel safe and trusted people to get there.
Right.
That in itself feels like a very solid metaphor for what her coaching practice, how she could set up her coaching practice, how she could market it, how she could establish it in a way that feels that way, that allows her to create that safe space for her clients. She has figured out how to create a safe space for herself that metaphorically looks like a cave. Some people would say it's hiding. But when she described it, it felt very comforting and safe. And sometimes that's a niche. That's something that our clients are actually looking for, is can you help me feel safe in my own self? Can you help me feel safe by myself? Can you help me? There are elements of hiding in there that we can, but right now as she's building the practice, and again, Ada, you can kind of come back and tell me if any of this resonates or not. While she's building a practice, me as a coach, I'm going, I wonder, I've got a lot of friends who have practices that do not have websites. Therefore, they do not have their picture plastered all over things. Is there a way that she can build a practice that feels like the cave and then build the path that these trusted people can get down? That's using the metaphor now to help build. So we can go one of two ways. We can go back to square one, which would be very valid to do in this case, and work with some of these foundational things, or we can take this metaphor and go, okay, if that's what feels safe right now and it feels nice, how can we build something that feels like that into your practice? Now, the client, Ada, is going to have to tell us what if that feels good at all. But that's where my brain went. My brain went like, oh, my goodness, she's got a safe place. That's what we do for our clients and a way to get to it.
So the coaching would be to get her to get in her body again around that safe pathway and be in that and know what that feels like in that pathway, and then let her think about starting a practice using the pathway and avoiding the hard water, right?
And using those feeling states, yes, in the pathway. What does that feel like? And, if that pathway, where does it go? If I were to follow it up and out of the cave, where does it go? That may be where I find my ideal client. Just a thought of this is now square two, dreaming and scheming. And now we can ask Ada, does that feel like a cop-out? Or does that feel really juicy? And at the same time, if you were coaching multiple sessions, you'd also work these limiting beliefs, but you'd kind of do them both at different times in order to allow her to keep taking her next hurdle step. So right this minute, since we've only got just like 10 minutes left in class, let's just pick a direction and see if we can, and it may be that you finish it outside of class or something, but see what might feel good. Let's bring Ada back into the conversation, Dee Dee, and see what might feel good to her.
Okay. So, Ada?
Yes, hey.
Hey. So, how does that feel for you to play a little bit with the pathway?
Yeah, I think that sounded great.
Okay.
Sounded great. When...
Okay. Yeah, I like that, too. So, let's if you can, just go back to that safe pathway that you've created for those special one or two friends. And if you can, just feel that in your body and let me know when you're there.
Okay, I'm there.
Okay. So if you can you follow that pathway and just tell me where it goes?
I think it goes up, and I just picture it as like a small pathway, and you know, there's like maybe larger rocks like all around it, and those rocks are really helpful because it helps people to lean against them. They need to, and can kind of make their way back up into.
We've got some background noise. Sorry to interrupt, but there's some background noise. If you're not muted and mm-hmm. you've got stuff going on around you, please mute, please. Okay, carry on.
And I think it just leads to, you know, a larger road up above, and that leads to maybe a big city or a town or but I think the path above is like sort of like a larger vista, and you know, it's for adventurous people.
Okay. Yeah, do you see any people? Could you describe them?
I think they're just sort of wanderers. I mean, I think that they're looking for healing. They're looking, I think they're looking for nature to give them healing, to kind of the earth.
Could you talk to them? I mean, are they, is it if you were walking on the path and you were to bump into one of them? Could you, like, would there be a conversation?
I think I could look at them, and I would probably wait for them to initiate a conversation or to see if they would smile and or if they wouldn't.
And are they? Is that who you're imagining? Are they smiling? Are they open?
Yeah, they seem very open. I mean, I feel like I can see their spirits, like, drinking and just healing from the surrounding, like, area and just even the sound of the ocean and that kind of thing.
And if you were to say something, what would you say to them?
I would just say, isn't it amazing that broken things can be beautiful?
And what does it look like there? I mean, the sky, and how does it smell? How does it look?
I think it smells like clean, pure. Smells like your cells are like opening up, like in your lungs, just to get as much of that in. I think it's just sort of a feeling of just being completely inundated, like in your senses, like the sky is too big, the waves are too big, the rocks are too big, mm-hmm. like everything.
What color is the sky? Is it there's sun or moon?
Yeah, there's sunshine and there's like clouds, so the sunshine feels very comforting. You know, it's not the really hot part of the day. I think all the bigness just feels like it's like a big quilt just around you. Like it feels very comforting and warm.
Mm-hmm. Feels good. I'm completely imagining it right now. there's no one else around and it's very just peaceful. It feels very peaceful.
Since we're getting to the end of class, and pretend this is the end of your session, how might you close this out? You've done this kind of visualization, or you played with this metaphor. How might you close this out?
I might just ask Ada to really remember this place, and mm-hmm. when she's thinking about her coaching practice and some anxieties come up and it seems too much with the rocks and the rough water, and to maybe go back to that safe pathway and either in meditation or in just in a moment to just go there and find that place with the people with people she feels safe with.
How does that sound, Ada?
It sounds great. That sounds wonderful.
So I have a quick question for you, Ada. When you're up with all the bigness and the people around, did you feel safe?
I did, yeah.
Okay. That's an important thing, I think, based on this, when you were talking about the fear of coming out as a coach, the fear of being seen, how old did you feel?
Yeah, I felt very young. I felt very...
Okay. Yeah. That would have been my hunch. Standing out in the bigness under the big blue sky with the big rocks, while there were also people there, how old did you feel?
Yeah, very interesting. I felt a lot older.
Uh-huh. Okay. Uh-huh. And that in itself is enough for a coaching session. Right there is allowing the young child to also get in touch with the older adult. And now you can just spend some time, maybe, Ada, showing the young child how this can be safe. And you don't even have to engage in conversation yet. It's internal steps. You may wait for them to engage in conversation, but you're out. There's the big sky and the big rocks and the bigness of everything cloaking you. You use the word cloak, like a cloak, I think, or like a warm blanket or something such as that. And how it actually felt safe. And is there a way you can recreate that for yourself this week, maybe in the real world? Can you think of a place that maybe you could go in the real world that might give you that same feeling state?
No.
No. Okay. So then do it in your own meditation chair at first.
Okay.
Just envision it in your own space that does feel safe. We're talking really turtle steps here. This is the start of building a foundation that will allow you to take the leap to build a coaching practice. So we didn't have time to get into why do you even want to practice. If I were coaching you like through all of this, I would get all the background of why you even wanted to be a coach and, you know, how can we marry out. And now the turtle steps, I think, are how to allow that little girl who wants to stay in the cave to have the cave, to have that safe space. We're not going to take her out of it, but to also be able to venture up that path and also feel safe, or have people venture down the path to her and also feel safe. And part of that is tapping, moving from being the little girl and tapping into the older adult Ada, which that is a part, that is, and the reason a lot of times with a client, I might not say all this out loud, but for you as coaches in training, that is the, a very big thing, is a child where you feel safe and powerless to moving to the adult where, oh, wait a minute, I can now consciously lead my experience.
Mm. Wow, this is wonderful. Thank you.
And so that's what the power of metaphor is. You do all that without telling the client you're doing all that, so it doesn't scare the bejesus out of them. It's awesome. You know, we're leaving the cave. Come on. No, it's a very subtle, gentle thing to where all of a sudden you find yourself in this expansive place, and it feels like a warm blanket. Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, is anybody, Ada, are you in an okay place to end for the day?
I am. Thank you. I am.
Okay. Dee Dee, how was that?
It was good. I mean, obviously, I wasn't sure I could do metaphor and learned a
you
lot
did.
From you coaching me.
And you did
yeah,
it.
I just kind of threw myself in there because I was like, okay, I don't know what
yeah.
I'm doing. But very nice.
Yeah, but this is, and nobody
I
does.
Loved it. I love it. I love it because I think it's a great thing because I do try to fix a lot. And this would be a great practice for me to just have fun and not try to
yes.
fix it and come up with the solution for people. So
and notice
yeah,
that if it's coming in before you can this is going to be a limiting belief the way it comes out. But many times before you can launch something successful into the world as a square three thing that other people can see, you need to be able to experience it first in your body and feel safe with the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Or else, why do it? There is no motivation to do this thing that feels not safe. So
getting
it, and that is part of square two. That's part of square two that a lot of coaches and clients want to just skip over. They want to go straight to creating the thing and getting it out into the world, get the new job, get the new partnership, get the new whatever, and they haven't created the safe space in their own body to be able to experience it in a new and different way.
Mm.
Or, you know, in a way that feels solid and like you can lead. It may be scary, but you feel adult-like and you can lead the experience. So
yeah.
This part of square two is a place that a lot of clients and coaches, I'm a very big fixer myself, and so it took me a lot of practice to feel really confident in my own work, going, wait a minute, there's something to be said about this safety in my own body before I launch out there. It's a very valid place to play around with, and if you ever think you've left a client without fixing something, think again, because if you've gotten them to at least shift their like child to adult state, or shift their Katrina shifted from the money being a block to the money being something that she was floating on, you know, that is huge, those shifts. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
Well done.
So, you guys, homework or go continue playing with dream analysis, continue playing with metaphor. And in your waking life, walking around, just notice how your mind plays with metaphor all the time. People talk in metaphor all the time. Most TV shows and things have metaphors reeled all through them. Just start noticing them, picking up on them. They're fun to play with. So, until next time, let me know if you have any questions on the forum. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, that was awesome.